Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Today's show, I'm joined by one of my best friends and a Cavs fan. He is Kevin Sanquet, a reporter up at CNBC, but like me, from the Cleveland area, worked at the Columbus Dispatch for a long time, but now is up at CNBC. Talked about Cavs Heat, the good and the bad from it. Just to give you some inside baseball here, the Cavs last year would not have been a team when they lost like this that it would have spent 15 to 16 minutes talking about the good stuff and then only talking about the bad stuff for like 10 minutes. That's the breakdown roughly of today's show. But a very fun show. Check out yesterday's show if you haven't already to look at the draft stuff. And then if you want some info on this Carmelo to Portland news, check out Locked On Blazers, which I'm sure will do a great job covering everything Melo in Portland, joining up with Dame and CJ and just what has been a disappointing Portland team. But who the Cavs will see you here very, very soon. But without further ado, here is my show with Kevin Stankiewicz talking about Cavs Heat from Thursday night in Cleveland.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, joining me now is Kevin Stankiewicz. He is a reporter at CNBC, formerly of the Columbus Dispatch, and like me, an alumni of the Devaliers. Shouts to Brunswick High School. Kevin, what's going on, buddy?
Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. We are going to talk about Cavs Heat. The Cavs, as part of this kind of big sports Thursday in Cleveland, lose this game 108-97. To run through just some of the top line stats for you, Kevin Love leads the way, 21 points, 6 of 16 shooting, 6 from the line, had 10 boards. Colin Sexton, 15 on 7 of 16 shooting. Jetty Osman had 12. Garland had 11, all of which were in the third. Larry Nance had 14 and 8, but did have to leave after hurting his left thumb in the fourth quarter. As a team, the Cavs shot 42.4% from the field, 8 of 32 from 3. The Heat shot 54.4% from the field. We're going to do some more detailed kind of numbers on how good the Heat were, especially in the first half in this game. Get into some of the turnovers the Cavs committed and some of the issues that led to. But Kevin, breaking news here. It's not Cavs news, but I just want to touch on this for a second. Carmelo Anthony has signed with the Portland Trail Blazers.
That is not what I expected to hear.
Pulling the curtain back, I told you as we were going to start recording here that Carmelo Anthony had signed with a team, and hoping you didn't know it because I wanted to tell you, and I should have like just broken this to you like live and just gone fully here with the bit, but he deal is non-guaranteed per Woj, but they've signed Carmelo. This is for the Blazers people I follow on Twitter. Shouts to Eric Gunderson. This is like something they've been trying to like will into existence. I cannot wait to like see all of the Carmelo Portland merch. Like, I hope they make it, even if he's not around on the team for that long. But this is cool. I don't know. I don't like love Melo in terms of like my analytical brain, but like this is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Melo's sort of fall from, you know, NBA All-Star to where he's at the last few seasons has sort of been ungraceful at best. But it was funny because I was just doing some reading on Portland earlier today about, you know, just their struggles this season. So I think from a fit standpoint, that's another thing. But just in terms of the Blazers kind of needing a jolt, it's still early in the season, but definitely felt like they were missing something in the very competitive Western Conference. So I guess credit to the front office for maybe looking outside the box a little bit and, you know, taking a chance on a player like Carmelo. So I definitely am excited to see that. And just, I like Portland, given that McCollum is from Cleveland and stuff like that. So hopefully would be great to see him be a valuable contributor for them and help them sort of right the ship before it gets a little too late.
Yeah, I'm just really here for like the weirdness of this and just like seeing Melo in a Portland jersey. Even the Photoshop that I'm sure was very hastily done looks just very weird to me. Yeah, I don't know. I'm good with it. I'm excited by the prospect of like Carmelo not having to end his career like the way he did. Again, like I don't know if this like helps Portland that much, but this is at least like an interesting little subplot. But going to the main thing we would talk about on a Cavs podcasting and the Cavs lose to the Heat. Start with the good stuff. Kevin, I keep saying this and I keep tweeting this and writing about it, but This Cavs group is really weirdly resilient in a way that they just were not last year. And I think a game like this, where they go down by as many as 27 or 28, the Heat are just absolutely thrashing them in a lot of ways in the first half. They come all the way back. They get this in within 10 points. They really, frankly, improved their play over the course of the second half and really made this a game. You know, lose late, that sort of was going to probably always happen once they fell in that big hole and struggled on offense the way they did. But, you know, I give this group credit and Beilein deserves credit, and I think everyone kind of in the organization deserves credit for, like, them just not, basically, for lack of a better way of phrasing, giving up the moment, like, they hit some real adversity.
Yeah, definitely they were not awake at the start of the game. I don't know if that 6 o'clock tip so that the game could be squeezed in before Browns kicked at 8:20. I don't know if that kind of just took them a little bit to mentally wake up, because they clearly were not the aggressor early on, and it looked like it was going to be a very long night. And then toward the end of the first and beginning of the second quarter, they compressed the lead and got it to what, within five, if I'm remembering correctly, like 37, 32 or something. Mm-hmm. So they sort of showed that resiliency in the first half, and then, as you noted, behind Garland's performance in the third quarter, closed the gap a little bit after falling down. So I think that that's really what you want to see, because you're not going to win every game. You know, you're not going to win, heck, even 50% of your games this season. So even in losses like this, seeing glimmers of positive signs is really what you need. And I think that resiliency tonight, where they were just battling, is something that you can take with you, and that they will be able to use in closer games throughout this season, just knowing that if, you know, they could be neck and neck and then fall down 12, knowing that they can close gaps. I think that's what you saw tonight. And even though they didn't get the W, that's at least something to hang your hat on, I would say.
I think that's, for me, the big, big thing. And it's like something that's not going to show up in stats or anything like that. But to me, like, just that attitude just is going to make a season like this, where there are going to be some lows. Like, I think there are a lot of highs right now. I get people my mentions, you know, asking about, like, the playoffs, which I don't think is at all realistic. These are things where I think the improvement's going to come, but it's going to take a little bit of time. The other, to me, the big, big thing I would say that really stood out to me was the Darius Garland 11-point third quarter. Was scoreless before that, didn't score after that, but comes in. He makes some really long threes. You know, he had, an overall kind of rough night. But if you look at him and some of the stuff that he did do, him making two deep threes, doing some real stuff, getting to the rim, just kind of showcasing some of the just playing looser, I guess is the best way to put it, and just kind of being the version of the guy that I think we saw a little bit in preseason and have seen in the tape a little bit. That to me is just really encouraging. For him to come out and do that and just kind of play that way was really refreshing, and it was a big part of the Cavs kind of stabilizing coming out of halftime.
Yeah, and that's what you want to see from a rookie. Again, sort of just as a microcosm for the whole team, right? There's going to be ups and downs with so much youth, so you want to make sure that he's not, you know, starting out scoreless. And obviously the Cavs got punched in the mouth, and for him to be able to stand in there and still play aggressively and play confidently, I think, again, is what you want. 11 points, that's above his season average, you know, so that's a better than average game for him. And to see how he started and still recover like that is great. You're not going to see consistency, and Cavs fans should be aware of that. After watching Sexton grow and struggle last year, you know you're not going to get the best of your rookie every night. So even just to see that flash for 12 minutes, I think is really fantastic, and reminds you, okay, this is why, you know, he was a lottery pick, and this is what hopefully we can get on a more consistent basis from him as the season goes on.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I thought the whole team in the first quarter into the second quarter was just not, I don't know what it was. They just weren't executing. Like, there were a couple plays with Kevin Porter, which I know we were going to get to him a little bit, but there were a few plays with him, you know, putting space on a step three and, you know, missing it and then getting a turnover and then throwing a bad pass to, I believe, Larry Nance in transition. So there were just different things in that first half that, you know, you saw good things, but there just wasn't that execution. I think we saw some of that from Garland. I remember, he caught a kind of a deep three, was able to beat his guy off the dribble and settled for a nice, you know, wide open mid-range shot and just threw it off the back of the rim. So there was just things like that where in this game where you saw a good sign, but it was just like they couldn't get the shots to fall. So I think that was a bit of Sexton's night and a Garland's night and a bit of Porter Jr.'s night as well.
Yeah, the other thing I'll say about Garland is I think it'll be interesting to see how he can just follow up on this. They're off. They play Philly on Sunday, which I think is a very tough stylistic matchup for him. But if you look at the schedule, you get the Knicks again next week, who are not good. The New York Knicks, not a good basketball team in any sense of the word.
Which, quick aside on the Knicks, some racism coming out of Madison Square Garden tonight, shouting at Porzingis to go back to Latvia. You really do hate to see that.
Tough environment.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah. Latvia is probably very nice. So this is like the next couple games. You get Philly, New York, in New York, at Miami, at Dallas, at Portland, at Brooklyn, then home against Orlando, and then Milwaukee in a month. That's like a really tough schedule for Garland in particular. You got Damon CJ in there. You know, Kyrie and Spencer Dinwiddie are in there. Eric Bledsoe, George Hill are in there. They're really like only quote unquote like easier matchup really is the Knicks. So I want to see how Garland just kind of handles these next couple weeks. That's going to be a really interesting little microcosm of his rookie season. Speaking of Kevin Porter Jr., not a ton I think to say about him, but I really just came away impressed, and I come away just very interested in him because he does stuff that I'm not expecting, and it's positive stuff most of the time. In this one, again, 24 minutes, 4-7 from the field, 1-3 from three, including a very nice three that kind of helped, kind of caught Bam Adebayo by surprise. 3 boards, 4 assists, did have 3 turnovers, 9 points, but like did a really nice job when he just kind of got thrown onto an island defending Jimmy Butler in the fourth quarter, had at least one kind of one-on-one stop on Butler, who's, you know, a top 15 player in the league. He's got the good instincts. The passing instincts are there. Some stuff with his shot I want to see improved, like his catch and shoot release just isn't quick, and that's going to have to improve. But, you know, just Porter Jr. doing stuff like that to me is just so encouraging considering we know how raw he is. And I liked that overall I liked how Beeline with that Delly, KPJ, Nance, whatever, that whole lineup, that was really the emphasis on how this team came back. I like that he stuck with it, and I like that Kevin Porter Jr. got to he earned that extra little bit of run there.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, Isaiah Thomas said this going into that the game.
Kev's legend, Isaiah Thomas, as he said on Instagram. Shout out to Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, I should preface that properly. Apologies to Isaiah Thomas. But, you know, he, of course, knows Porter going back to their days in Seattle and that kind of hooping community out there. And, you know, he told, I read this on Cleveland.com, like that he was just talking about how Porter Jr., he's going to compete every night. And he's just like a basketball player through and through. And you're going to always get that effort from him. And I think that that's what's been so enjoyable to watch this season from him is exactly what you said. He's just competing and is able to do some nice things. And again, up and down, inconsistent. As I mentioned, I thought he was playing a little bit too fast at times in the first quarter. He just needed to kind of take a deep breath there for a little bit. But I think he's really showing some nice things that anything you really get, any production you get from him this year is kind of like a bonus in a sense, given that he was, you know, the 30th pick in the draft and you have Garland as your top one. So any sort of valuable contributions you get from him and consistency you can see, I think it's fantastic. And he definitely showed why he's deserving of minutes tonight. And again, he's going to make mistakes too. He's young. He's going to figure it out. But he's really shown some nice flashes this season. And I'm excited for what he can do with more playing time and as he gets more comfortable to this league. Because like Garland, keep in mind, didn't play – you know, deep into the March Madness, they didn't play 35 college games. So,
and he was suspended for like a big chunk of his one season at USC.
Exactly.
So it's not even like he's had like a complete body of work. And he got hurt during the draft process, didn't play in summer league, all that.
Exactly. And like Garland also is coming off an injury too. So keep that in mind, you know, fans, for both of these two guys, is that this is not only their first sustained competitive hoops, it's at the NBA level. So it's definitely dramatically different than the last time they were playing consistently, which is to say in high school. So definitely just bear that in mind as they go up and down through this season.
I would say the last little thing here is I thought Jetty Osman was good as a glue guy, and then I like they took a bunch of free throws. I know you also mentioned before we got it going here that you like the balanced scoring. I think the free throws were part of that. The Cavs 7-21 from the line. That's good. It kind of helped them stay ahead a little bit against the Heat, or kind of not stay ahead, but kind of survive that. They had a 7-point advantage overall from the line. Took 10 more free throws than Miami. Kevin, any kind of final positive thoughts on this game?
Yeah, well, which I think you say you might have said 7-21. Just that was 17.
Yes, 17.
So that's 81%. So that's very good work from, you know, from a team. I would just say defensively, again, you know, Chris, I know you've been harping on this. Folks who follow you on Twitter, they know, you know, that defense, despite some nice things from the Cavs this year at times rotationally, this is not a team who's got defense at the core part of its DNA. So tonight, that to me was just the biggest thing. Like, Cavs shot, I think, 42.5% or somewhere around there, which isn't much off their team average for the season. I think they're shooting around 43 as a team, but allowing the Heat to score or shoot 54% from the field, that's just going to be really tough to win a lot of games when that's going to happen. Unless, again, you're matching it, you know, if you're shooting 48-49%, but that to me was just sticking out. I was like, Cavs couldn't really get a stop early on, and they just didn't shoot the ball all that well. So that's just kind of what stood out to me. It was just defensively.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back, talk about some of the negative stuff from this game, specifically on Larry Nance's injury, as we don't quite know what that's going to look like, but that's going to be there. Just want to thank my bookie for being one of the great sponsors of this network as well. Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at mybookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and mybookie will match 50% of your first deposit. We'll be right back. All right, back here with Kevin Stankiewicz from CNBC. Kevin, I think for me, the we'll get into the defensive stuff. I think a lot of that, if you watch the game, it's pretty clear sort of what didn't work and some of the issues the Cavs had defending a very precise offense. To me, and I think Tristan, we'll get into him and why he maybe struggled against Bam. But to me, I would say that just the big negative, and I don't want to go too long on this because it'd be speculative. According to John Beilein, it is a re-aggravation of a left thumb injury. But if Larry Nance, who I thought played well tonight and does have kind of an awkward fit, Jackson Flickinger wrote really well about this at Fear the Sword today on Thursday. If he's out and the Cavs already are a little thin up front, it puts a lot more of a burden on Tristan, puts more of a burden on Kevin, both those guys already have massive burdens, and there's not really like a good fix. You'd be getting into Tyler Cook and Dean Wade, two two-way players getting some minutes. I like, you know, some of the potential those guys have, but I don't think those guys are ready to help in the same way Nance can right now. So if Nance has missed any time, any significant time, that's going to really, I think, even if some of the stuff he's done he hasn't been great yet, hasn't even been particularly kind of consistent or super impactful in a positive way yet, that's not going to help anybody if Nance is out like 2-3 weeks or something like that. And again, we don't know that yet, but he had the little wrap on his hand and everything, but he looked like he was in pain when he hurt his hand on that dunk.
Yeah, and I guess, Chris, do you have any updates? Last, if I remember off the top of my head, Henson's injury was about a month, right, at the end of October. So they said like 2 to 4 weeks for John Henson, who, again, would provide some sort of front court help. But that doesn't really even look like he'll be available.
He's back at the end of November. So it's like we're going to get him back kind of in the rotation and just observing him. End of the month, and then Ante Zizic should theoretically be around then too, but they didn't pick up his team option for next year, and I don't quite know what the incentive to play Ante would be, and just in terms of his skill set, he wouldn't really fix anything particularly anyway,
exactly,
or provide sort of what you're looking for. So Dylan Windler's going to be back, and theoretically that could be sooner than those guys, so maybe you play smaller. I don't know. I think it presents John Beilein with kind of his first kind of weird lineup thing to kind of figure out as he goes along.
It does. And yeah, I guess the frustrating part of that would be, is again, as you said, Nance hasn't been, you know, by any stretch of imagination, fantastic this year, but it really does just kind of put a hole in the front court right now. And as you know, Tristan wasn't great tonight, but you know, as fantastic as he's been, you really don't want to put any more on his shoulders than you need to. And same thing with Kevin Love, because we know, you know, what happens when Love is playing out of position and is asked to do too much. You know, we've kind of just seen him, his body, frankly, just like break down as well. I think part of that personally has been from playing out of position and being just asked to do too much. So having Lance in there, Larry Nance in there to kind of is beneficial for Love. So it's definitely a little bit worrisome to see what would happen. And I mean, I don't really know, without Windler, there's really no, I'm trying to think of like off the top of my head, any small ball lineups that you could play. And there's not really any, because the Cavs don't have a tremendous length on the wing as it is. So
this could potentially be bad. So what you'd have to do is, they did it for a couple minutes tonight. You'd have to, like, they have this thing where they talked about Clarkson playing the three. He played the three against Miami for a little bit. That is something they've thrown out as something they might do. I don't, obviously don't love that. You know, if you were to go small, you know, then you would have to do, you know, it could be something like, you know, whomever the two guards are, and then it'd be like Jetty and Porter, but that's putting a lot on one of those two guys to defend inside. So like, that's not optimal either. You know,
right.
Again,
right. Porter's 6'4", right? So
yeah, I don't buy that. I'm just gonna say that. I don't buy that he's 6'4". I think he's like 6'6". But he's kind of skinny, you know. But 6'4" to me is, feels like a little short. I don't buy.
You would know. You haven't been.
Yeah, I just it. I'm calling crap on KD not being 7 foot and Kevin Porter Kevin Porter Jr. being 6'4". This is conspiracy theory corner with Locked On Cavs. But I think the solution like might be like play Dean Wade or play Tyler Cook as just kind of a minutes filler. Use your 2-way days up. You know, I think obviously you want they're not plays for this year. They're plays in case like you have you know, if Kevin Love is, you know, leaves the team or gets traded, or like Tristan isn't back, like then you have another guy in house that you're kind of developing this year. But you know, maybe use them now a little bit. But we'll see what happens with Nance again. They don't play till Sunday, so there will be some time for him to at least kind of get evaluated properly and not feel like he has to rush back. And again, the Cavs are not in a position where they need him to play, you know, like right away anyway. They don't need him like for a big finals push right now. Like they can be patient and like make sure he's good again. So that's good. I think kind of related to Nance is, I just thought Tristan, this was just the worst, least impactful game we've seen from him. I don't even know if he was necessarily bad, but just like he's been putting up double doubles basically every night. He's been just an absolute beast in every way. And then tonight comes out 2 points. 3 boards, only 2 on the offensive glass. And I thought, you know, Bam Adebayo was guarding Kevin Love, so it wasn't like Bam was taking him out of the game, but he spent a lot of time on Bam, and I thought Bam outplayed him, was just a little more athletic than him. And then you look at Myers Leonard, I thought Myers Leonard kind of did some good work, like kind of nullifying what makes Kevin, what makes Tristan like useful in it. Like, that's not necessarily like the easiest thing to do, so like credit to Miami. This will be one of those things I think I pick up more on like on a rewatch of some kind, but it's just one of those games where like, in the first game all year, where we did not feel the Tristan Thompson kind of impact in a way that we're used to.
Yeah, and I guess another thing to note, Zach Lowe pointed this out, I believe, I think it was Zach Lowe, maybe last week, you know, just about Tristan's efficiency this year. Like, so tonight he, in addition to, you know, struggling like us in the points column, he also had 4 turnovers tonight, which, going into the game, he had 9 for the season, which was quite good for him, given, you know, I don't need to describe his game for Cavs fans. You all know.
Like, a lot of Cavs fans, like, don't think he's good. And I think that's wrong.
Well, right. That's definitely wrong. Let's just be clear about that. But, like just in terms of, you know, ball security, there certainly were times, you know, when he puts the ball on the floor, he's not, doesn't have the best guard on the ball all the time. But this year has been different. He's been really good with the ball, been smart with his passing and stuff. So tonight to see 4 turnovers from him, you know, bringing his season total to 13, just kind of, I think, was indicative that he just didn't really have it tonight. Wasn't even like, you know, he was just, you know, only took three shots. So something tonight just wasn't his night all around. But I think the turnovers thing is something to just watch for the season, because he's been quite good at it. So tonight was just another area of his game that he just wasn't plugged in. And you, I think, mentioned this a little bit beforehand, but I think Bam has something to do with that. He was really, really good tonight.
Bam's awesome, man. Bam's really good.
Yeah, he had tremendous energy and physicality. And, yeah, he just definitely outplayed Tristan. I mean, that goes without saying. You just have to look at the top line stats there. But I think that some of Tristan's performance tonight definitely was attributable to Bam and the front court play of the Heat. So it's not all on Tristan necessarily.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Kind of one other kind of little bad thing. I think if you watch the game, you sort of got this, but I thought Miami, just with how precise that offense was, just shredded the Cavs defense up. Just they had no real way of kind of countering, you know, some of the cuts, some of the screen action the Cavs, like, they had. The Cavs have a lot of young defensive guys, so like that's just going to be part of what happens when you have young guys trying to run through a bunch of screens, like Darius Garland and KPJ and stuff, like the urgency and the know how to kind of navigate those things is not there. And then I think just watching, again, this is going to be a rewatch thing. We'll illuminate some more of this when I just focus in on that, I guess. But I think looking at the communication, it just seemed like there was also way more instances than normal where coverage was just totally botched, and it kind of led to easy buckets. The last thing I would say, Kevin, that was kind of negative was I don't think he was bad per se, because he did score. He was kind of the one guy, I thought, in the first half that was really kind of pushing the tempo a little bit and really trying to just make some stuff happen. But I didn't love this Colin Sexton game. This, to me, was one of those games where you would have maybe liked to see him take his foot off the gas just a little bit. That's not really his DNA, so it's like hard to say that to some degree, but I also just feel like there was just a little, him trying to do a little too much sometimes, and when it results in like no free throw attempts in particular, and he, you know, is missing a bunch of shots, like that's just kind of tough.
Yeah, I mean, again, I could draw up worse performances from him, no doubt, but I definitely, tonight it seemed like, you know, kind of like I was saying with Garland, just like early on, it just didn't seem like for whatever reason, everybody just didn't seem to be their best self tonight. And I think with Sexton, I just would again remind folks that he's young and he's going to have these moments. I mean, I think he had the worst plus minus on the team tonight. So again, there's just defensively, that's its own thing. But on offense too, I thought he did a nice job attacking. A few times I kind of on transition, yeah, I definitely kind of am thinking of one layup that was a good finish for him. So it wasn't all bad, but I think it's just going to really take some time for him to, like you said, just understand when to take his foot off the gas a little bit, when to be a little bit more precise and work the ball around. Can't always be at 110 all the time. And I think that tonight he would have benefited from just kind of like I said with Porter Jr. a little bit, just kind of taking a deep breath and just trying to be a little bit more, to use your word to describe the potent Heat offense, a little bit more precise tonight would have, I think, been would have been beneficial for him. But keep in mind, despite some of the negatives, the guys really did only lose by 11. And as we know, they definitely fought hard tonight. It wasn't a bad game by any stretch of the imagination.
Last thing for that. That'll be our last thing on the bet. Again, the Cavs lose 108-97 against Miami. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to be back to touch on just a quote John Beilein had. Just kind of get into it very, very shortly, because I think it's just an interesting quote. So stay tuned for more from myself and Kevin. All right, Kevin Stankiewicz here from CNBC. Kevin, just read you this quote really quick. This is from John Beilein, pre-Cavs Heat. Shouts to Spencer Davies for tweeting this out. Quote, "I'm not just saying we're there yet, but it's much easier to go from the bottom to the middle than the middle to the top, and sustaining that over time is much more difficult than just getting out of the basement." When John Beilein says that, What is your just kind of response to that quote from John Beilein? I'll put this quote in the show notes, people, so you can just read it yourself and kind of think about it yourself. But Kevin, when you see that, what does it make you think?
I think, I mean, it's just a good piece of realism, like, you know, just kind of understanding where the Cavs are at. I think that is what you want to see from the coach. He's setting the tone. And I mean, I think that it kind of just comes back to what I've thought about the Cavs this whole season is I've really enjoyed watching them. I think that you really are seeing some concrete signs to help them. Like, they're not a joke. You know, you can't laugh. They played, I know they weren't at full strength, the Sixers the other night, but, you know, they played them within a point. Like, you're just seeing that competitiveness and, frankly, the talent where you're like, oh, yeah, okay, this team isn't just, like, stuck in some purgatory. When I watch this team play this year, I sort of see a path to them being, you know, a quality NBA team. And you definitely didn't have that last year, you know, in some of the early stages of the rebuild after LeBron left the first time. You certainly didn't. It took some time before you really felt, obviously once they got Kyrie, but even then, I still didn't really recall thinking, like, what is the Cavs' future? You know what I mean? That first time, you're just like, what is this team? And so far this year with Beilein and some of the stuff he's done offensively, from a coaching standpoint, I just feel like better about where the Cavs are. And that, to me, what I get from this quote. It's like, oh, yeah, they might not be in the basement all that long. Not saying they're going to be in the playoffs, but this is going to be a little bit more of a competitive team day in and day out than maybe we've seen at other parts of rebuilds for the Cavs, both, you know, even earlier into the decade as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would say that I think when you look at the flow of the season, I think there are going to be some lows that we haven't seen yet. You have really young players, you have, you know, some potential, you know, injury prone players and guys that we need to see if they, and specifically Tristan and Kevin, we need to see how they sustain these things. The roster could change. You know, again, these are, you're banking on three really, really young players to play consistently, and that just isn't usually how that works. There are going to be some lows. But I think when you just look at the 10-plus game, the 11 games we've seen now, the quality and the effort we've kind of seen with this Cavs group so far, I think it's a lot of positives. I think it does just kind of raise them out of the cellar. Again, if they keep this up, I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league. I think the playoffs are a crazy idea and just sort of an unrealistic pipe dream. But there's something sort of positive here, and I think that's a really good thing if you're kind of evaluating this team a little bit. The vibe, I would just say, is just so much better than it was even at this time last year when the season wasn't totally kaput yet. But this is just like a much more like enjoyable thing to evaluate, to process, to watch than we've really had ever in a non-LeBron year. And it's sort of, to me, like when you talk about Beilein approaching it this way, it is like an organizational shift to sort of be sort of pragmatic about this. And I'm pro-pragmatism, so I'm just very intrigued to see if they can actually sustain that level of level-headedness that we just have not always seen.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, you know, I remember talking about this at times last year. You know, the Cavs season is obviously in the tank, but, you know, I was tuning in and watching because Sexton was fun in the second half of the season still, right? He made it entertaining. And I think that I feel like even better now than I did then, you know, because the way Sexton played at the end of the season definitely gave me optimism as a fan. So, like, to be early in the season, be like, oh, wait, yeah, this whole season's not just going to be total hell, I think is great and something that fans should, you know, enjoy. I know it's hard to enjoy losses, but just I feel like there's more here than we've seen before, and frankly, than I thought. So that's great news.
If you were to say who's been the most interesting Cav to you, just kind of in this season, who's it been to you? And then I think Tristan has just been fascinating just because of what he's done. But who has been the guy for you?
Yeah, I was going to say Tristan. It's just been fun to watch him really just be a force. And as you've talked about, Tristan is good. I made this point plenty when, you know, back in the days of when LeBron was here, that, you know, you need to, there's value in not and changing the game without having to score. You know, that's what I think just Tristan, I keep coming back to that with him. So to see him add that double-digit scoring to his game this year and just be a good leader. That's certainly been the most interesting. So I'd put him one. And then just two, I think my thoughts on it kind of I talked about it a little bit, but I would just say Kevin Porter Jr. for me has been a little bit more interesting. I think Garland will figure it out and be a quality NBA player. Porter Jr., I'm still not so sure. So I've kind of enjoyed watching him a little bit, maybe more than I have Garland this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think Garland, if he starts launching threes, though, I'm in. Like if he starts taking long threes, like I'm there.
Shoot it, Darius.
Yeah, like just I think some of it's his legs and him not being comfortable yet, but we'll see if he gets there. But that's gonna be it for today's show. Find Kevin on Twitter at Kevin_Stankey. Covers CNBC. We'll offer a bunch of takes on urban planning on his Twitter feed as well, and tweets about Cleveland sports every so often. But Kevin, thanks so much for coming on.
Chris, thank you for having me. I hope to be on the show again soon. I am in New York now, but I will be definitely watching the Cavs, and I regret not buying a ticket to that 30-point win at Madison Square Garden on Sunday.
It probably would have been expensive. Your bank account is like, thank you.
Hey, it would have. Honestly, the prices were falling a little bit. The reason I didn't do it is I was just afraid that the Cavs would go out there and put a clunker on the court, and you know, it would have been better spent on a Billy Joel ticket or something. So,
wow, Billy. I don't know. I kind of regret it. Well, you know, Billy Joel. That's a tough hang.
That's up for debate too.
Yeah, I mean, like just save it for the next Maggie Rogers show in New York. That's the move.
That's fair.
That's the move.
We will do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Me and Dobie out there are gonna come up and see you and take you to something fun. But that's gonna be it. Thanks again to Kevin. Thank you again, listeners. Cavs are back on Sunday, so I'm gonna have a recap up after Cavs Sixers. Already have Greg Schwartz booked for that one, so stay tuned and we'll talk to you then.